This week's episode of the Dive Podcast is brought to you by Neil Kelly, a leader in the design, installation, and maintenance of residential solar energy systems in Oregon. Visit neilkelly.com/solar to learn more and to schedule a complimentary solar assessment, or call them at 503-288-7461. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
Weed is powerful, right? Like, it is just, weed itself is a lens to look at economy, look at privilege, look at agriculture, like so many things in a really different way. And you can just broaden that lens on everything.
That's a snippet from my first guest, Lauren Yoshiko, who you might know as Mary Romano, which was the nom de plume Lauren used as a pre-legalization cannabis writer for Willamette Week. Lauren joins me, Willamette Week's weed writer Al Courant, to discuss the paper's cover story, "The Future of Cannabis is Female." You're welcome. She and I will chat about her contribution to the cover package, an oral history of Lovely Farms' Leftovers strain, and then I'm going to cut it up with this week's cover model, Meg Gandhi, the founder and CEO of therapeutic cannabis company Oracle Wellness. It's Saturday, April 23rd, and this is episode 68 of The Dive. For this year's 420 issue, the cover package proclaims, I'm not going to sing it again, the future of cannabis is female. But I think women in the industry know the past of cannabis is female as well. The extracts we dab today, the cannabis tinctures and salves, they're all born from remedies that were formulated in kitchen apothecaries and passed down through generations of grandmothers. I mean, hello, the flowers that we smoke come from the female of the species. The whole affair just radiates big femme energy, which is why it feels so critical to let women lead the way as we continue to build this new industry. I mean, some of the best cannabis comes from female-led farms. Fresh, Fire, Magic Hour, Sugar Top, Meraki. These are all notable brands led by females of the species. Some of the most notable work being done around cannabis in general is also being done by women. Take, for instance, the Cannabis Workers Coalition, an organization that provides union-esque services to cannabis workers, and the Oregon Handlers Fund, a nonprofit that provides workers' permits, which are the number one barrier to employment in the industry, to workers who couldn't otherwise afford them. Women founders are laying groundwork for an industry capable of crazy liberation, not just from pharmaceuticals, but liberation from economic, environmental, and racial injustice. I don't even care if I sound like a pothead. Weed is the key to an equitable future, and women are the key to weed. I don't want to be pigeonholed, so I've always maintained that I'm not a weed writer. I'm just a compelling writer that happens to write about weed. But after sitting with Lauren and Megan, I actually feel proud to even be an ancillary part of this industry. I mean, it's led by some of the coolest women that I've ever met. And I want to smoke weed with all of them. You know what? I think that's possible too. I'm going to work on making that happen. All right, well, I'll dish with Lauren and Megan in just a sec. But first, here are three things I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Sophie Peel reports City Council member Joanne Hardesty's challenger, Vadim Mozeriski, might be the kind of social security judge who relishes denying people, and he might have used polarizing anti-black tones with the Citizen Oversight Committee, and he might be pandering to a wealthy white electorate, but he definitely snowboards, hikes, and does Wim Hof scream breathing. And I might have butchered the pronunciation of his name. Apologies. Rachel Monahan reports that Republican gubernatorial candidate Stan Pulliam called Oregon an abortion tourist destination, thus demonstrating a fundamental misunderstanding of both abortions and vacations. Cinemagic does a monthly VHS night featuring all types of wonderfully bizarre straight-to-tape films. And next month's feature is Dr. Mordred, Master of the Unknown, a brazen Doctor Strange knockoff, and it's showing following the May 6th late show of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Dr. Mordred. And those are three things that I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Now, let's get into my conversation on Lovely's Leftovers and Women in Weed with Lauren Yoshiko.
Hi, happy belated 420. Did you have a good one?
I'm still high.
Good. I know, whatever the high hangover is.
Okay, well, for this week's issue, you actually wrote about Lovely Farms. I'm just going to unpack this a little. This company was kind of struggling against Oregon's familiar selection of favorite strains, but then they go on to cultivate something super rare and also super high in THC that kind of low-key rejuvenates their whole company. So what went into putting this piece together?
So I am a flower consumer. I enjoy flower pretty much, yeah, daily. I have tried a lot of flowers over the years, and I am not afraid to say that I'm kind of a snob about it. So when I find good stuff, I remember it. And I, yeah, over the years, just have smoked a shit ton of flower, which is, I think, the first way to becoming a bit more educated is just trying a lot of different products. I was at Truly Pure, which is a dispensary that I don't often go to, but it was like a friend in the neighborhood brought me to that inner southeast spot, and I saw on their top shelf they had this stuff from Lovely, and I do recognize that name, but the farm hadn't ever stuck in my mind for anything in the past, and their leftovers was insane, and like everyone I smoked it with, that pickup, like that ate every sesh I had. They were just like, what was that again? Like, where did you buy that? Like, everyone else noticed the difference too, so it really left an impression on me, and I wanted to know more because I've had the fortune over the years of getting to know so many farms in Portland, writing for Willamette Week and for other people, and I had never connected with the Lovely guys or gals. So I reached out to the team, just like straight up Instagram DM, y'all want to talk? It was the story I was looking for and then some, because it was a shorter piece, and if I could have, it would have been double the length, because this guy has been growing for long before even medical was going. We have, you know, a classic legacy to legal tale here, where this guy has some fantastic stories from the good old days. As it said in the piece, like, he was just feeling like, damn, am I out of touch? Like, am I just part of this old guard that doesn't get new smokers? And made him really question, well, identity crisis as a grower of fire weed. But this reestablished that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I kind of have this feeling that, like, Oregon is known for really, really good weed, but not necessarily rare weed. Now that Lovely, I mean, they doubled down on the rare phenotype. Do you think that that's going to encourage other small farms to do the same?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we have a pretty progressive market flower-wise. I do think we have some people here that are trying really hard to break the mold of the familiar popular strains and push people to try. Like, Astral Works from Proof was, like, that, like, was popular before people were really even understanding what they could get out of, like, a one-to-one, like, high CBD, decent CBD, decent THC strain. And I don't know if it's like that in other flower markets. I feel like it's that high THC market still is just, like, such a dominating thing. So I do think we actually have a more adventurous cultivation scene than most places, just because we're such growing nerds in this community. People are just so hyped on the craft and the science of doing things in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. It's like the consumers just don't need to catch up. So I don't think Lovely's alone in having experiments that probably didn't go as far as people expected, because there's still such a like trial and error mystery process of what people are going to get into. And there's so many stores to choose from that it's hard for, I've heard a great statement that like there's no brand loyalty. There's no loyalty in stoners. because we just have so much options, and like that's just tenfold in Oregon, where everything's like super affordable. We all get to have truly such a spread of offerings at our fingertips, like in any direction from our apartment, wherever we live in town.
Totally, we're spoiled.
There's like
for
five
choice.
Dispensaries that are selling like incredible products around you. So it's hard, I think, for any growers to really get a hold of people. That's why like I'm always really impressed by like Resin Ranchers, because I think they do have some loyal following, and they really did that only by product. Like, it's not like we saw Resin Rancher billboards all around town, or they have like influencers or whatever repping them. Like, very much just enough people remembered, like, that was a Fireball, I want to seek them out again.
I mean, you're prolific in the cannabis area. You do a tremendous amount of work in the cannabis space, but I mean, the doors Mary Romano opened, y'all. Where would we be without you?
Mary. It all started with Mary.
Mary Romano walked so that Brianna Wheeler could also walk.
Oh my god. And shout out Willie Weed, the original writer behind the first column, and the reason that I reached out and was like, hi, could I do this too? And they were like, yeah, sure.
Oh yeah, give them their flowers as well. So yes, in regards to the cover package, the future of cannabis is female. Like, what are your thoughts on this phrase?
It's definitely a convo, an ongoing conversation in the weed and surrounding cultural spaces. I think, there's like a funny context to it, is that the flowering cannabis plant is female.
It's female.
A male plant cannot create buds we smoke. So there's that little scientific nugget that I think is becoming more widespread and is like an empowering botanical element. But in the regards of modern industry times, I think a lot of people are excited about seeing all the women doing interesting things in this space and getting a bigger spotlight than they would get, or just like faster growth than they would get in other markets. Like, I think just the notion that this industry is so young and still developing, that more independent upstarts can get their name in the game faster. And that's been sort of the case for women, but yeah, it's a nuanced thing. Like, as much as there's these thriving figures and empowering stories and women doing really interesting things, like, there's certainly just as many challenges that women continue to face that make it, I mean, oftentimes that double standard endures of needing to work twice as hard to get taken just as seriously as your male counterparts. And yeah, it's a ongoing convo, I think.
Yeah.
Thriving in the industry in the conventional sense, like getting a license, it takes generational wealth in most cases, or it takes connections that are, yeah, just so many obstacles. But the people who are getting creative and finding ways to get involved in the industry without a license have been really smart about making do with what they have and getting in on the ground floor in a memorable way.
Now let's chat with Oracle Wellness founder Megan D about cannabis wellness.
Thank you so much for joining me. So this week's issue, the future of cannabis is female, and you are not only our enchanting cover model, but more importantly, you are the founder and CEO of your own cannabis wellness company. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Oracle Wellness.
So we are a plant-based wellness company. We offer wellness solutions for higher quality of life. So we're looking to help people integrate cannabinoids and terpenoids into their wellness routines for things such as chronic pain, anxiety, depression, or maybe even just trying to figure out what your self-care routine can look like, you know, in a more healthier way.
What led you to plant medicine in the first place?
So it's partially innate, given that I come from farmers. And I found this out the more that I got deeper into my work working with cannabis and other herbs. But it's honestly, it's in my lineage. I just kind of awakened to it through cooking. So My culinary skill set led me to working with plants. It's really a full circle kind of situation. I was a dealer first. Let's start there.
Let's start there.
I have a legacy, from the legacy market. So I wanted to not have to hide what I was doing any longer. Mm-hmm. And that led me into cooking with the plant. But when I began cooking with it, I had a bakery, and that was my front for being a dealer. Mm-hmm. The integration of cannabis and food came along when I had a client challenge me to put cannabis into a pastry because he was dealing with depression and PTSD, some pain, and exposed me to this idea of putting the two together. Long story short, he had a good time. And word spread fast about what I was doing. So I found myself getting people too high or not high enough in my exploration. I had found joy in helping people reclaim themselves with this plant. So I had a friend in Philly who was an artist, and she had cancer. And she had suffered some side effects to where it shut her hands closed, the chemo. It had shut her hands closed, and she couldn't paint any longer. I myself am a creative. I went to art school. I have a degree in photography. But, like, that really resonated with me as an artist to lose your ability to create. Yeah. So I reached out to her. I said, hey, I have an idea. I don't know if it's going to work. We're just going to try something out. But I hear cannabis is really helpful when it comes to cancer. So I said, I have a lot of infused olive oil, because I was a chef at the time, right? Mm-hmm. I have a lot of infused olive oil. It's super potent. I don't know what it's going to do. I said, you can eat it. It's going to get you high. Or you can put it on your skin, and it'll alleviate some of the pain. So she calls me. She had received the package. She calls me. She's crying. And she says, I don't know if you know what you have here, but I need you to keep going because I have full mobility in my hands again in a matter of minutes.
Whoa.
With that, I formulated my first product for Oracle Wellness, which was the topical. So yeah, that was a pretty pivotal moment for me, and seeing how this plant can really help someone reclaim themselves, you know.
I mean, what would you like to see change in the industry?
More accessible opportunities for people of color to build out their businesses in the industry. You know, there's definitely some gatekeepers. You know, there's a lot of information that's not very transparent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
What should listeners know about Oracle?
You know, we make the tastiest tinctures on the market is my selling point for sure, because there's a lot of tinctures on the market that don't taste good.
As a chef,
it was a goal to make products that were desirable in taste. We keep our ingredients vegan, organic. We source medicinals locally here in Oregon when we can. The art of the medicine remaining medicine kind of dissipating, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to honor that because it is medicine.
Big thanks to this week's guests, Lauren Yoshiko and Megan D. Find them online and follow them because they are both amazing women doing amazing things. And thank you for joining us once again, and I hope you'll join us next week. Until then, bye.